Hello, everyone. Welcome to our fifth episode of InsurTech Business Series. We want to say thank you to the people who have, you know, made this possible so far, so good. I mean, this is like the fifth episode since we started, and yes. You know, people have given us audience and they've shown interest in what we do. So this is like, you know, saying thank you first before going into today's business. So my name is Olumi, and with me here I have my co-host.
Yeah, Damola. Yes, I'm super excited. I mean, five episodes. It's, I mean, when it all started, I personally, I just looked at it. How are we going to keep this up? Where do we get people to come on board and speak about some of these things that we talk about on the podcast? But we have people listening to us from around the world, so it's quite interesting how it has been, and really want to say thank you. We definitely would love to continue the conversation, and we sure will, and we want you to continue to join us on that train. And hey, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. Join our community there. We are 150 strong at the moment. Small, but hey, we're growing. Let's continue the conversation there.
We are also available on Twitter. You can reach out to us as well. So, Damola, what do you think about today's episode? I know we'll be talking to, you know, the founder of InsurTech LA. Of course, he's not a Nigerian, and it's so interesting to see that there are lots of people like us who had a different educational background, and we were able to work our way up in the insurance industry. You know, I'm pretty sure that while we were all studying at different courses and university, it didn't even occur to us that someday there'll be a deviation from that path and we'll find ourselves in the insurance industry, which is, you know, an interesting one, especially when you have people with different exposure coming together to make something work, right?
Yes, I know, right? I mean, it's quite interesting. Gilad Shai, who's going to be coming on the show today, is the founder of InsurTech LA, the InsurTech community in Los Angeles. And he also is the founder of Bound API. So Bound API is a tech startup providing technology solutions for the agency system in America. So it's going to be interesting to hear how technology plays into the agency system there. Because, I mean, we have an agency structure as well in this country, and maybe there are things that we can learn from that. You know, and he's also a co-author of the InsurTech book. So it's going to be an interesting conversation hearing about how he thinks we can approach innovation, you know, in insurance, especially in this part of the world. So yeah, I'm quite excited about that conversation, and we'll get right into it immediately after the break.
All right, stay tuned.
Welcome, Gilad.
Adedemola, thank you very much for having me.
So how are you doing today? Sure, it's in the morning there.
It is in the morning. I think it is 10 a.m. in sunny California. I'm based out of Los Angeles. So, you know, beside the coronavirus and trying to stay at home as much as possible and keeping our social distancing, life is pretty comfortable.
All right. That's great. So before we go into the discourse of the day, can you tell us a bit about yourself and your journey into insurance?
I'm an Israeli. I've been living in the United States for 11 years. This is the 11th year. My background is technology. It's insurance. I've been in the insurance industry for 5-6 years now, mainly within introducing technology. I used to work for Farmers Insurance, which is one of the top 20 insurance companies in the United States, which is actually not a subsidiary, but is, but let's call it part of the bigger Zurich group that we all know and like.
Okay.
Beside that, I'm a co-author of the InsurTech book. I run InsurTech Los Angeles. I've been running the community and the events here in Los Angeles for the past 3.5 years. And I'm on advisory board for several startups in the space. And of course, I've been running my own startup. That supports what's the future, in my opinion, and others, what's the future of insurance.
From your own end, especially in America and some of the industries that you have conversations with in other countries. So how has it been for insurance and insurtechs, you know, especially in this period?
So I would say almost everywhere, and we need to understand that different countries, different companies, different structure. So like everything else, we need to understand where they stand also in the, let's call it the pecking order. Now, in the US, and I would say that will go for everyone, it starts from what the hell is going on. People don't know, we entered some sort of uncertainty, especially with pandemic. What does it mean for life insurance? That's the catastrophe. It's outside of their tables and the predictions for the reinsurance. They are looking at like, oh my god, we are going to pay so much money for the carriers because they are not calculated for that type of risk, or the spike, or the black swan, or whatever you like to call that, within the personal lines, especially commercial. There is such a huge uncertainty because what's going on is that people are losing their job, which means a workers' compensation, one of the products here in the US, is going to change. Not enough premiums. There are other policies that we need to pay it out. And even if we are looking at car insurance is changing. People are not driving as much. So they are starting to go back to the insurance company, telling them, I don't need your insurance because I'm not driving. So the risk is less. Less people are driving, so the risk is less. There are less traffic accidents. The people themselves telling them, I'm not driving at all, so or that you cancel my premium, pause it, and which that part, you know, the insurance companies are happy because they don't need to pay as much claims. But on the other side, they have the problem of brand. How are they going to look like in case of something happens? How they are going to look for their customers, as you know, to be fair, because it's all about, when you think about insurance companies, and that's, I would say, everywhere, insurance company needs to look secure, it needs to look fair. That's the company. When something happens to you, the policyholder, something happens to you, you can trust them to come and pay the policy, pay the claim, and help you. They need to be fair, they need to be trustworthy. Now, if it's something so simple, it's like, I'm not driving, why are you still charging me so much money for car insurance, or less people driving? You should reduce my cost or do something. Now, we are already three months into this pandemic, and we see that insurance companies are doing that. A couple of them are skipping payments, other providing all kinds of discounts. They are trying to figure out something that will actually work from a marketing, especially from their brand positioning in the market, to look better. I just listened to another webinar from the guys from Score, and they are trying to figure out, and this is a little bit more towards the life insurance. It's like, okay, we want to sell life insurance. Life insurance is very, very hard to sell because car insurance, insurance in most of the countries, it's mandatory. If you have a car, you need to buy insurance. You cannot just...
Yes, definitely.
You cannot just drive. If you hit someone or, God forbid, you get into an accident, whatever, you need to have the car insurance. Now, life insurance, you need to buy that. Someone, usually an agent, will need to educate you. They can use fear tactics. There are all kinds of sales tactics, and tell you, okay, you need to buy life insurance, long-term care, annuities, whatever that may be, that will work to what you need. Now, part of the bigger problem of life insurance is really depends on the product. You need to go to a doctor, especially in the US when you're looking to buy the whole life or universal and one of them, they will tell you, okay, we need to know that you're actually healthy. If you tell us if you tell us that you smoke, you don't smoke, we can figure that out. But if you're 40, 50, we really want your physician to write a note to, we need basic blood tests and to know that you're healthy, you don't have any cardiovascular disease or anything like that, so we know what's going on. So there are several steps in this conversion funnel that increases the lengthening the sale process of a policy. And now, during the pandemic, most of those steps don't exist. It's very hard to get to a physician. It's very hard to find labs that will process a blood test today or tomorrow. They are overswamped, they are overwhelmed. So it will take them at least 2 to 3 weeks. And in the meanwhile, the insurance company is like, okay, we would really like to sell. Or to be precise, it's the agent who is like, I want to sell. And what happens to you if you don't get it, if you don't sell immediately? The customer will go to someone else.
Yes.
Or they will just don't buy. Yeah, so it's a very interesting how the insurance, and surprisingly, the fact that people are talking about alternative ways to underwrite, getting data that will more or less compensate for the lack of the information that exists today from going to the doctor is surprisingly fast. Needless to say that all of this is nice, because in order to take that into a real effect, they need to go through the regulation.
Yeah, like the regulator, yes.
Exactly.
So it's quite interesting that you brought that up, because, I mean, it's the same here. In fact, I have a personal experience where I have a customer who wants to buy a life insurance policy. In fact, 2 life insurance policies. And then we're having this issue about going to the physician. And then this has actually dragged them since February. And getting to take up those tests is an issue, because, hey, the hospital is saying, okay, yes, we are available for you, but the man's family is saying, hey, you can't go there because of the situation, because of the pandemic situation and the like. So we can't expose ourselves to such risk. So what do you think about how important it is for insurers to begin to intentionally innovate, especially with this situation that we find ourselves at the moment?
It's super important, because if they will not innovate, they will just wither and die. It's a question of evolution. There is new reality. That reality can be very short. However, it has a big significance on the global economy and, of course, their own company and their customer. So if they are not going to change and even cover, we've been into this for 3 months, but it ripple and will continue. The effect, we're going to feel it in the next year, even 2 years. People don't know, there are all kinds of prediction models. So they need to innovate to adjust to the new situation while keeping the eye on the ball and the strategy for what's going to happen in 5 to 10 years. So super important.
Like you rightly said, the whole pandemic situation is unexpected, and it has really affected insurance companies in situations where sales are down, but then there are still claims, workman compensation, like you said, that the job loss, job loss covers are still there.
Business interruption.
Yeah. So the claims are kind of like increasing. Is that going to be part of the things that they will consider when they are looking at innovation in terms of how they assess risk now?
Yes. That's a great incentive to move forward, right? It's a new situation. There's been a meme that is running, who is driving your digitalization process? Is it your CEO, CIO, or COVID-19? That's a meme that's been running around, right? And what insurance industry is very conservative for many good reasons. And what we've seen that the majority will go like, okay, you know, unless we are forced to make a change, we are not going to take a change. You have innovators, you have the followers, but then you have, of course, the majority which go like, if I don't need to change, I'm not changing. This is not the core business. Selling insurance is the core business. But now they realize that if we don't change, if we don't do that move, we cannot sell. We cannot process claims. So that's part of it. And it's very interesting to see what will come out in Nigeria, especially with the structure and the population and everything that your country has to offer.
For insurers in Nigeria, in Africa, how do you think that they should approach innovation in terms of insurance products and how to increase penetration?
When we are talking about Africa, and it's very important to talk about Nigeria and not Africa, because different countries, different people, even within Nigeria, we're talking about more than 300 million people and many tribes and many languages and dialects, etc. So we need to understand that. And we also need also to think about where you guys stand today and when, in terms of innovation, what you've done in the past. I'm not familiar with the insurance industry of Nigeria.
Right.
But what we've seen in Nigeria compared to other places, the legacy system is not structured. There is all kinds of legacy in terms of oil, in terms of cultural structure. But when you talk about innovation, think about cellular phones and communication. It's amazing. There were all kinds of blips of using cell phone payments, using the cellular, which in the US, it's still way behind. So there are all kinds of incentives that coming from the ground up to make leapfrogs forward. And the same thing is with insurance. So when you think about, if there are all kinds of challenges, if it's the challenge of, I don't trust the insurance company, I don't trust the payment, that will create the incentive to create products, innovative products, that will say, okay, here is a system that will make sense, so people will actually consume it. They don't need to be the traditional products that we see in England. They don't have to be different products. It can be micropayments, it can be on-demand, it can be different structure in terms of the underwriting, it can be a different structure in terms of the claims process. So when people talk about trust, they always jump and say, oh, blockchain, smart contract. Most of the 99% of the time, it has nothing to do with blockchain. It just needs to be some sort of parametric. But as you add, as you dive into and you try to understand what do we need actually to set in place so there will be trust among the different nodes or the different participants, then you, okay, blockchain can actually be a solution, because blockchain as a solution is very expensive. Now, and you can do things that will just do it without that problem. But going back to the innovation here, there are great opportunities. Now, somehow, always in terms of, let's call it global business, I have the interaction with Nigeria, Brazil, and Japan, except, of course, from Israel and the US where I live. And I was recently in Brazil, and it was a very interesting product that they are trying to sell, which is for motorcycles. Right. Only for motorcycles. Why? Because you have 50 million motorcycles. They are and lightweight motorcycles. That's the transportation and the livelihood of so many people. So it's already a combination between commercial and personal motorcycle insurance that they pay on the go as they drive all the time. And it immediately, if something happens, that person gets a new motorcycle or a substitute very, very, very fast. And the reason is because they need that. The majority of the population is poor. This is their livelihood. So if you can deliver them that motorcycle fast and make sure that they keep their livelihood, That's what you need. So there are all kinds of great opportunities that coming from the actual behavior of the people and how they use it. And I'll use another Nigerian Brazilian example. Think about cassava, right?
Right.
So when was that? I did my MBA. So it's been a while.
Right.
2008, 2007, just before the crash. And we were looking, we were working with a group in Abuja. And we were looking, okay, how can we provide and sell cassava? Basically, it was cassava plants. So you can process the cassava and then set it up for fufu, lafun, whatever the dishes that you're going to prepare later on. And, you know, when you think about it, when you come from Israel, yeah, it's great. It's an agricultural technology power. We have all that stuff. Actually, I went to Brazil to figure out what are the machines that we need for, you know, to run in Nigeria. Great. But when you want to package it, you think about kilo. You think about the metric system. But when you understand that people actually don't use that, they use the cups to measure and to sell and to buy all that, you go like, okay, we need a different packaging. This is, while we have the metric system, this is how actually people are accustomed to buy a cassava or the flour that comes, that you create. And that was, so we had to shift that. Sadly, that project didn't end up because of the crisis in 2008. But it was, you always need to adapt that to how people actually consume your product.
Right, so it has to be from the customer down to the product. So I mean, in the past we've seen that, say we think that this, the people will buy this product and we launch. It has to be the other way around. How, what do you people want, what's the need, and then we create the product. Right, so the insurance industry being more of like a conservative industry is quite resistant to change, and they're used to a certain way of doing things, and people working in that industry have developed certain types of skills, right? And so with the advent of changing customer behavior and the necessity for adopting technology now, there is a push for learning new skills. How important do you think it is for current insurance professionals and people looking to join the insurance industry? You know, how important is it for them to continue to learn new skills, like learn about some of these new technologies and take knowledge from some of these books that are being written now, the InsurTech book that you co-authored, a book from Rob Galbraith about the end of insurance as you know it, just a few of them that I know. And so how important do you think that it is for current professionals to begin to learn, unlearn, and relearn?
It's super important. Let's start by learning. Even if in your late age, you always need to learn. Now, beside that, even in whatever that may be, you always need to learn, because the books, these books, in my opinion, are already old. Sadly, it's still very new because adapting it into reality takes time. There are companies that work very fast to act upon. Now, beside that, you need to understand what's going on in your industry if you want to survive in the industry, and also to adapt yourself to be successful in the industry. Now, most of them have ideas, couple of them have actions, but the main thing is, if you're an agent, if you're an underwriter, if you are a claim adjuster, each one of them, each one of these roles are secure and not secure at all at the same time. It's a little bit of a Schrödinger cat here, because in your, even if, let's assume there was no technology and things would stay the same, it's not a factory that you're going to continue doing whatever you've been doing from the age of 20 until the age of 70. For 50 years, you're not going to do the same. Things are going to change. And especially when technology steps in, you need to understand, how is that technology going to make your life better or going to make you better at doing your job? So it's understanding the threat, and understanding the advantage. There are two things. It can threaten, you know, the classic, who moved my cheese?
Mm-hmm.
It can threaten what you're doing today, your business, if you're the business owner, or if you are the professional, it's going to take my role, I'm going to be fired. Or it's a better tool to make you better so you can start growing into a different direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And speaking about that, I know that you're doing some work currently with the agency system there in America. Can you speak a bit about your company and what are the trends do you think that we'll begin to see in terms of the agency business?
Unlike many people in the insurance, I don't think agents are going to die. Mm-hmm. I think agents are going to be better. They're going to have a shift in the next 5 to 10 years of how the agency is structured.
Mm.
I don't see the agent disappearing. No matter how the technology is going to be amazing, you have Google who is trying, you know, you have a Google chatbots that can order pizza and have a conversation, but it's still very, very limited.
Mm.
So even, you know, we would like to sell everything online, it's not there yet.
Mm.
But the agents are changing. So when we look on Japan and the US, you still have almost 200,000 insurance agents.
Mm.
The thing is, the problem is that they are very old.
Right.
Mm. Very old means that in the next 2 years, most of them are going to retire.
Mm.
That's their age. In Japan, for example, part of their job is to go and collect checks.
Mm.
In the US, their main job is to sell and retain a relationship with the customer. Mm. And basically, once they reach that saturation point, they are just sitting on a book of business and not trying to create new business, just, you know, keeping that book of business alive and running that and make sure that the premiums churn. Things are going to change. We have new generations. I'm not talking about millennials. They are old. They are like, I'm a Gen X, but the millennials are old already. They have families. They are in their 30s. It's done. Gen Z and Gen, I have no idea what comes after Z. Someone give me a double A. They expect everything on mobile. They don't want to talk to people. But it's something that we already said about the millennials. And, you know, beside being a little bit snowflakey, they are the generation that works the hardest, learns the hardest, and invests a lot of time. It's actually very polarized generation in terms of stereotype and reality.
Mm.
But whoever is coming next, their expectation is to communicate. Everything needs to be super sleek. Mm. Everything needs to come from Apple. Everything needs to, you know, in terms of the style and the perfectness.
Mm.
And they expect the same thing from insurance. Especially in the US, it's like everything needs to work seamless. I don't need to talk to someone. I should just go to the website, go to the, you know, to the phone. Mm. I'll give you all my privacy and you'll figure out and just make my life easier. It's all about conveniency.
Mm.
Conveniency is a key role of charging. Mm. It's amazing.
Mm. Yeah. So how does Bound API come into all of this mix, especially working with agency?
Mm-hmm. So our job in Bound is to facilitate the automatic sale of the simple products. That are few products today: general liability, personal liability, car. I would say that car insurance is the most complicated one in terms of the flow. Workers' comp, term life insurance. So simple products that you can sell online. This is where we come in and work and being actually an infrastructure between the carrier, the wholesaler, and the agent, telling the carrier, it's like, listen, you have hundreds of thousands of agents.
Mm.
Today you spend millions of dollars on maintaining one website. That's what you do. marketing, all that stuff, they come to you. If you don't have your website, you know, you somehow try to work with agent. Mm. Agents don't sell small premium products. They have an internal threshold. If you're going to call an agent in the US today telling them, hey, I need car insurance, and they will need to go to shop around through insurance carriers and work for 4 hours on something that will pay them back $20, they are not going to do that. So from efficiency, agents don't sell. They will not call you back if it doesn't make economic sense for them. If it doesn't have the ROI, crickets. You're not going to hear anything from them. So our job is to work with the wholesalers and the carriers. So the agent, with the push of a button, can add a form that connects directly to the carrier so they can sell direct online insurance products.
Looking at insurance distribution wholly now, I was listening to a clip from one of the previous conferences on InsurTech Insights, and there was this, there's a startup from Germany where they are mobile only, right? Yep. So their distribution is strictly via mobile. Looking at that now and the number of other distribution channels that are available now, so how do you think an InsurTech or an insurance company choose the right distribution channels to use for their business?
So the selection of the distribution channel is super important from understanding where is your risk intake comes from. As simple as that. Which means, in lame terms, it's if you're going to sell an insurance for professional drivers, so non-personal cab drivers, Uber drivers, stuff like that.
Yeah,
are you going to target them on, I don't know, computer? No, they are never in front of a computer. They are driving. So the best way to target and to get them, it's only on mobile, right? A beautiful company by the name of Sure, they're doing that. I love what they do. If you are another great company, Motion Auto, based here in Los Angeles / Utah, they're all thing it's like, they know that if they are going to target a specific type of marketing, that's the type of audience, that type of customers that are coming in. So going only mobile or website or whatever, that will dictate or will place a filter of what is the type of risk and what is the type of policy holders that you want to get in. So if it's the future, if it's the, you know, different segments, and it's super important, you know, to do that, you know, behind the scenes, the carrier needs to understand, it's like, how do I correlate? And I'm sure that they have the statisticians, or what we like to call today, data scientists, that know how to correlate between the different segments of what we like to slice as the market or the target audience, and of course the risk buckets.
I won't leave you without asking about this. I mean, the internet has been abuzz with news of Lemonade
IPO,
yeah. Yes. Now, and yeah. I mean, it's exciting because they are an InsurTech company and first of, you know, so what do you think about that? What do you think about that move? And then what do you think is the prospect for InsurTech in the future?
So if we take a step back, Lemonade is the technology or the company, the startup, which was the pebble that was thrown into the lake that created the ripples of what we see today as InsurTech revolution, or the InsurTech phenomena.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at them and say, this is a textbook startup. They started, people don't familiar with them or the founders, they're especially Shai, who is the least known one. This is his third unicorn. So
wow.
Daniel, who is the CEO, which is usually on front, of course. I think this is his first unicorn, which is more than $1 billion valuation company, but he's done amazing. Yes, right. He's a super successful person. And this guy's been running this company like a textbook. Now, going back to insurance and reality and what does it mean? And when we are looking at the first, at this IPO, it's a great success story, which is still, which has not been, you know, completed. There are ups, there are downs, there are all kinds of reasons. But when we are looking at an IPO, it's very significant, not just from the capital, but also it's a certain milestone that tells investors, tells the insurance companies, the different players in this industry, here is a startup which is a full integrated insurance company, right?
Yeah.
It's not just an agency or an MGA. They are a carrier by themselves that started from scratch, no legacy, built it up, and now they are going public in, I would say, 4 to 5 years. They reached an evaluation of over than $1 billion in 3 years. So you should so there are all kinds of flags that at this point the industry, if they haven't put attention so far, need to go like, oh, this is doable. Now, now if we take a step back, they are very small. They are still compared to, you know, State Farm, all these guys that are in 50 billion evaluation or the smaller, let's call it the majority of the top 20 are worth $20 billion. Lemonade is, it's petite, but it's not about where they are now. It's where they are going.
Yes,
and
the potential.
They are growing. It's a potential, and especially in insurance, you know, there is time. It's a year by year, not a day by day. You know, at the beginning, the loss ratio, the combined ratio was horrible. You start to fix it, you fix it, you fix it, and then you reach a point that the combined ratio is actually positive.
I mean, it's a, like you said, it's an interesting story, and I mean, it just tells of the opportunities that are there. And if I mean, insurers, they are not yet thinking about how they can digitize some of their services. I mean, easily some people in time could come and take their lunch, you know, basically, you know, if you don't move with the time, and like you rightly said, you know, if you don't innovate, you die. So thank you very much. Thank you very much for your thoughts. Thank you for joining us. I mean, it was quite interesting speaking with you, and we hope that in some way we can, you know, work together with you. You know, our community here is quite, it's still growing, and so maybe some way we can work together with your community in InsurTech LA and see how, you know, can drive innovation even in this part of the world.
Yeah, it will be my pleasure. People can reach out to me at gilad@insurtech.me. As I said, besides, I'm advisory board to startups. I have my own startup and working from time to time with carriers on their strategy and innovation strategy. So it's always interesting to have a discussion with people like yourself who are growing a community, like to talk about the future. How can we be constructive? How can we build the future so it will make sense and will benefit everyone?
Yes. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Hello and welcome back to the new segment of this episode of InsurTech Business Series. My name is Folemi and I'll be bringing you the latest news stories. NICOM extends recapitalization deadline to issue new recapitalization guidelines as COVID-19 hinders execution. The National Insurance Commission has once again extended the deadline for recapitalization from the 31st of December 2020 to the 30th of September 2021. The commission, however, provided minimum requirements for insurance organizations to meet before the initial deadline of 31st December 2020. FBN Holdings divests from insurance subsidiary, sells firm to Sanlam. FBN Holdings PLC has divested its 65% equity in FBN Insurance Limited to Sanlam Limited, which used to hold 35% stake in the insurance firm. This effectively confers full ownership of FBN Insurance and its subsidiary FBN General Insurance Limited on Sanlam forthwith, following receipt of all relevant regulatory approvals. CIN unveils new curriculum for intending practitioners. The Chartered Insurance Institute of Nigeria has initiated the first set of books in its new curriculum to be used for the foundation stage of the Institute's exam, F01 to F08. This is in line with the body's plan of increasing knowledge and raising awareness about the relevance of insurance benefits to Nigerians. The president of the institute, Edi Efekoya, at the presentation of the books in Lagos, said the books represent a body of work that will greatly stimulate the intellect of the modern day professional. And that will be all on this episode's news segment. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned.
Welcome back. I'm sure you enjoyed that conversation with Gilad. There are a lot of things that definitely, you know, I have learned. And I know that you also have learned. But the thing that jumps out for me is when you talked about the importance of insurance professionals, you know, embracing innovation, embracing technology, and how important it is for them to understand how technology works and so that they can take advantage of it, because that's what the time demands.
Tamala, also, I was even going to ask you this. Do you think that the innovation rather that you fondly spoke about as well and technology, do you think it can enhance the agency part of our business, knowing that we are heavily reliant on, you know, agency, you know, broken firms and all of that?
Yes, I think so, because we're talking about micro insurance. So even if you are looking at micro insurance, mm-hmm. you have to be able to look at how you can leverage technology and create the product, and also to the people, distribution channels. Exactly. So it's something that that we need to look into, because I mean, we can leverage mobile technology. We can leverage telecoms. You can look at how you can, you know, provide products where people can buy through WhatsApp, you know, for example, or through USSD, through a text, you know. So instead of, you know, we are looking at sending agents to go and look for customers, and with that, we might not be able to achieve the scale that will make it profitable for those kind of cheap products. You understand? So, but with technology, you know, leveraging, partnering with telecom, looking at USSD, you know, looking at even API solutions, you know, partnerships as well with its fintech organizations as well can really help, you know, to achieve the scale that we need.
I mean, in terms of the penetration rather than the 0.5% that we are currently hovering around. I mean, it was an interesting conversation with Gilad, and it's nice to see that people have thought this through, and they think that the next generation of insurance is not going to be the same traditional way we've been used to carrying out our businesses. So it's now for most people to break down products according to the needs of people. That just want to buy a fragment of a particular product and just buy that particular product that speaks to their current need, which is good. So thank you very much to our listeners. Thank you very much. Again, I remain your host, Olumi, and my co-host,
Damola. So thank you and stay safe. Bye-bye.
Bye.